Hello, everyone. I'm Trent Luce. Welcome to another edition of Rural Routes, the program where we gather every day at this time. John Bolden, we do it Monday through Friday anyway. And what we do when we gather is continue to address the issues between rural and urban America. I think we made a pact at the beginning of 2020 that John Bolden, retired law enforcement official and retired animal rights activist, would join us once a month. We haven't done real good with that, John, but hey, it's a red shirt Friday. It's the spooky Friday of the month and you're here, so it's all good. How are you?
I'm doing well. Doing well. This first time on video with you. I feel like, you know, I could be end up almost as famous as you are just by being
Of the times that you and I've done this on the phone, I never envisioned you wearing bib overalls.
Well, this is my daily attire. This is it. Other than when I, you know, when I went to South Dakota, I had to break out the fancy clothes to meet Governor Noem.
Can you believe that was January already? How long ago that was?
No, I can't. I can't. And
think about what's happened since January 31st. What was it? The 28th, maybe January 28th, when we were at the Black Hills Stock Show.
Yeah, I know. I know. And it was just Pandora's box was just beginning to open while we were there.
Yeah, and since that time, you've tanned some hides, you built a smokehouse. Have you done anything else?
Yeah, I have. I'll tell you what, my business did really well this year. Even with all of the challenges and diversity, the challenges of getting treated lumber for the kind of work that I do. And the price has doubled and tripled in some cases throughout the year. So it's been a challenging year, but I stayed busy.
Just for people that maybe are not familiar with John Bolden, we see behind you, if you're on the video, a U.S. Marshal plaque. That's not something that you just revere U.S. Marshals like Matt Dillon. It's the fact that you spent a great deal of time as a U.S. Marshal. You want to just kind of give us a capsule of that event? And you can start as a deputy sheriff if you like, but I want it to be somewhat brief.
Right. That actually the U.S. Marshals part was the culmination of 17 years of law enforcement experience, law enforcement work that I was very blessed to have been able to do. I was on the U.S. Marshals Fugitive Task Force for a little over 3 years, and that overlapped with my time as an undercover officer for the state of Indiana. I was assigned to the Marshals for that 3 year period and really had some great experiences there, worked with some really good guys and created some lifelong friendships out of that.
I thought of it the other day, a couple of weeks ago, it was homecoming weekend at our little small community of Loup City, Nebraska. And Loup City, by the way, is less than 1,000 people. We had a football game taking place, and about the time the game started, the announcer comes on the microphone. He had just gotten an alert, maybe a red alert, some number or color, that there was a fugitive loose within 5 miles of the ball field and that everyone should exercise caution. And I'm like, oh, and by the way, he's armed and dangerous. You know, I'm thinking the football field's the last place he's going to rush up on, but it was just, it kind of put an eerie feeling in the air.
Right. That's, but you would be surprised where they would go to try to blend in and become, you know, if they can protect themselves around a bunch of innocent people, they'll try to do that sometimes. In fact, that brings to mind an interesting story that how I got assigned to the Marshals from investigating illegal gambling was the U.S. Marshals reached out to my boss, and said that we're finding that a lot of fugitives are spending time on casino properties. And although I was not assigned to a casino property, I did the internal affairs investigations on the casino properties if there was ever an issue with a gaming agent. So that was the beginning of the relationship between the Indiana Gaming Commission, my department, and the U.S. Marshals. And it just... I didn't do a lot of fugitive tracking in the casinos for that 3 years, but that's how I got my foot in the door.
Well, this guy was fairly creative. They did catch him 3 days later, but when they had him cornered, he started his car on fire. That created a distraction, and he was able to get away.
Yeah, that would do it.
Yeah, who would think about, oh, I'm in trouble. I'm going to start my car on fire.
Yeah, well, these guys, their job is crime. So they spend as much time thinking about how to operate their business of crime as you do raising hogs. That's the truth.
Yeah, I suppose that would be the case.
They probably get a lot of ideas from Hollywood, too.
I'm sure most of their ideas come from Hollywood. How big of an issue is illegal gambling?
You know, at the time that I was investigating illegal gambling, we focused on the major organized crime part of it. I mean, there's illegal gambling at every level, you know, and mm-hmm. there's in some states, including the state of Indiana, even some poker games, playing poker games and betting money is considered illegal. So, I mean, it depends on the description of how seriously you take it and how much you're against the vice of gambling, as they call it. But our focus was mainly the state wanted to regulate some of the gambling taking places in the bars and some of the other facilities.
What are they betting on in bars? Just curious.
They had what was called the Cherry Master machines or the gambling machines that used to be real common in the corners of every bar.
Mm-hmm.
And just to be perfectly honest and blunt with you, Trent, and as I normally am about everything we talk about.
Right.
The casinos, the horse tracks, there were two horse tracks here in the state of Indiana, still are, Shelbyville and Anderson, Indiana. And they were pushing for land-based casinos. But prior to that, they only had what was called, a boat casinos or whatever. It had to be on water.
Right.
So they were pushing, the casino industry was pushing for the horse tracks were pushing to have the same rights as the other casinos. And part of the give and take in that, the governor at the time, Mitch Daniels, said, okay, I'll do this, but I want to create this undercover task force of experienced police officers to go after the illegal gambling in the state. And I always joked about it, that he just created a group of hitmen basically to go after the revenue that was being lost in the bars and the other gambling. So, I mean, that's
not a joke.
No, it's not a joke.
That's what was happening.
Yeah, it was a revenue chase. But we pretty much shut down that part of it within the first year or so of creation of the department and moved quickly into bookmaking and corruption and animal fighting. But the bookmaking industry was really a problem. It's legal here now. It's regulated and legal here in the state of Indiana now, bookmaking is. But it's about the time they legalized it, COVID hit, and there's no sporting events. So I don't know what the bookmakers and the gamblers are doing right now. They're betting on something, I'm sure.
Isn't that the crazy part of the law, though? Here, a whole task force, which at that time I'm sure was your entire world, to crack down on illegal gambling, which now, as we said here in 2020, is not illegal.
Right. Yeah, it is.
That's crazy.
And there were 16, there were just 16 of us, and we were divided up between North Central and Southern Indiana. I was in the Central Division, which covered Indianapolis and surrounding area. But, yeah, there wasn't a lot of us, but we made an impact. We made the governor happy, let's just say that. The governor was happy with what we had done, and my boss was a retired colonel from the Indiana State Police, who's an absolutely wonderful man, and just a true leader. In ever since.
So I didn't know this was taking place, and I'm sure it's happening in the States as well. But, you know, every morning at 6:30, Andrew Henderson and I have Across the Pond, and he said that if you were to bet $1,000 on President Trump winning the election next Tuesday, you could turn that into $3,000. Those are the odds of Trump not winning. Hmm. I had no idea that people wagered big on things like presidential races.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And I think that that if you look at statistically over the years, that the bookies, these folks that are betting on or taking bets on the presidential races have been pretty accurate with their odds. So if you really want to know who's going to get elected, you know, bookmakers they're not in the business to lose money. They do their homework. So
it's kind of like the casino in Vegas. They don't keep inviting you there because they like giving away money. Is that what
that's
you're saying?
Right. That's exactly right.
And it's an interesting position for you because ultimately it doesn't matter what your thought is. As a law enforcement official, your job is to enforce the laws that are on the books.
That's right. That's right. I was tasked with enforcing those laws. And speaking of the way things change over time, you know, when you educate yourself outside of, for lack of a better term or word, outside of indoctrination that comes from an internal organization, when you educate yourself outside of that and start reaching out to folks that may be opposed to your current ideology, our laws should change. And people's opinions should change on things.
John, we're having so much fun. I've not paid attention. We're way over time. I want to remind people that the stand at Paxton County is an illustration of how animal rights activists intertwine with local law enforcement officials. John has watched it, and you can watch it on Netflix, The Stand at Paxton County. We'll take a break. We'll be back with a leg two. We might talk about animal fighting in the second segment. Trust me, more after this. Welcome back to Rural Route, Trent Luce, alongside John Boland and his dog. What's the Beagle Bassett's name?
Bobo.
Bobo, perfect dog name.
Yeah. He's a dandy. He's a varmint dog. He'll spend the whole day outside and just wipe out chipmunks and mice and whatever he can find.
Do you smoke those chipmunks?
No. I'm not going to waste all that space in that smokehouse for a few little chipmunks.
All right, before we get to something really hardcore, you're coming to my place to build this double outhouse size smokehouse. Mm-hmm. Tell us about yours. What motivated you to build your own smokehouse, which I think people need to do more today, by the way.
Yeah, I mean, I've always wanted one. I've always thought it'd be cool to have a kind of an old-fashioned style smokehouse and do it the old way. And I mean, mine's not quite that old-fashioned, but it's all made out of cedar and poplar, and it's double-lined, and I've got the firebox out back, and I'll be smoking with applewood. I got really lucky this week. I called a local orchard, and I didn't really expect them to say, yeah, we have applewood, but I called it just the right time because they were actually taking out some trees that had been there since 1960.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah, pretty good sized trunks on them. And they're replanting, you know, newer strains of apple trees. And
right.
A lot has changed, I guess, in that industry since 1960. So
you reckon?
Yeah, I would say. So these old apple trees, they were cutting them off and leaving a stump about 6 feet high enough to push out with a bulldozer. And I went in with my chainsaw and I got greedy. I mean, I hauled home. My old flatbed truck was loaded up, and that's what I'm going to smoke most of the meat with. I'm going to use hickory and stuff too, but pork I think does best with applewood. What do you think about that?
I don't know.
You don't know anything about pork flavors?
No, I don't.
Maybe you ought to check with a local farmer rancher up there and start raising some hogs.
Nope. You know, I might.
You sure?
I don't have a smokehouse. I want a smokehouse. People never think much of it, but when I cook something like a whole loin or whatever on my fire pit, I use cedar. And some people don't like that cedar. But I started using cedar because I was in Texas once, and they served me some fish on a cedar plank, and I thought, man, this is really good. And I have an abundance of cedar, so I use cedar, and people just don't like it. But Macy and Aaron Sawyer say that apple is perfect with pork.
Yeah. I heard that cedar and anything in the pine evergreen family is not the preferred method to smoke over a long period of time. If you're doing it over an open fire, maybe that's different. But
I don't think you'd want to put cedar in your smokehouse.
No, I don't. No. They'd make a pretty strong flavor.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
I'll build that smokehouse just whenever you're ready.
It looks like by the comments that we're getting that you've really tapped into a lot of people's desires. Everybody wants a smokehouse.
Yeah. And, you know, I have to say that another reason that I was just for the food preservation. You know, this year kind of shook me to the point of everything that I've always believed, that we better be prepared to preserve food and we better be prepared to raise food and we better have some on hand. Things go bad, and that was another big reason, the self-sufficiency. If you have smoked meat, you don't need to refrigerate it, and you don't need to, you know, it's reserved.
Do you think things could go bad Tuesday?
Let's just say that within some of the law enforcement world that I used to belong to, that there's some communications that are saying that it could either way. Yeah. Either way the election goes, we're going to have some issues, I think.
Yeah, I agree. And you know as well as anybody that you cannot buy ammunition right now. What does that mean?
No, it's just everybody bought it up. My son and I, when this stuff, when I got
John,
back from
stuff, John, I knew the supply and demand effects of it. That wasn't my question. That means somebody bought it.
You asked for an answer. There's the simple answer, Grant. It's been sold. The local Rural King had, I bought them out when I got back from South Dakota. My son and I went in and we bought some new guns and a bunch of ammo. And this was before it even really hit, you know, where people got crazy about. But isn't it great to be in a country where we can do that, where we can stockpile the weapons and the ammo? And
we take it for granted so much that most people don't think about what a privilege it is.
Right. That's right.
And it is a privilege, right protected by the Constitution. I'm not mincing words, but I just Warren's now black marketing ammo to me. So that's all good. back to the smokehouse. And that's going to lead me into the chicken discussion. You actually said you're going to waste some good wood by starting by putting a chicken in there.
I want to start small. If I'm going to destroy something, I don't want it to be a side of beef.
You got a dog chasing chipmunks. You can practice on that.
Oh, that's true. That's true. And there's squirrels everywhere out here. I can hang some squirrels.
That's a true story. There's squirrels everywhere. Even in Brown County, Texas, there's squirrels everywhere. You have chickens, right?
Yes, I do. And I have some big turkeys.
All right. Back to illegal gaming.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't think about this, but in my home state of Nebraska on Tuesday, there is probably our most contentious issue is a gaming question and whether or not. By the way, you mentioned this and I never understood this. Why was it originally that casinos needed to be on water, not land? I don't know the answer to that question.
I don't either. I honestly don't know the answer to that. It was most likely some kind of ridiculous give and take that the casino industry made a deal with lawmakers that, you know, it supposedly had to be able to move. It couldn't be a fixed. That's kind of in the nutshell reason. It couldn't be a fixed structure on land. They had to. Mm-hmm. The anti-gambling folks, you know, that was the way they compromised, I guess. But these things all ended up being a fixed, you know.
And you saw this business up close and personal. I simply approach it as though it's a choice. If people choose to go, I have in the last 30 years spent a little money in a casino. It mm-hmm. wouldn't amount to much. But I don't think you should restrict people from doing that. Do you have a personal view on gambling as a whole?
No. I think as long as, I mean, if people want to gamble, that's in my opinion. I mean, obviously there's some addiction issues. I saw some families really destroyed by the addiction of it. I saw some bookmakers that took advantage of folks when they couldn't pay up. That Hollywood portrayal is pretty accurate. They'll come into your home and take everything out of the house if you can't pay, and they might do bodily harm if you can't pay. So that part, that aspect of it, but it's gambling in casinos and that type of industry, in my opinion, is nothing more than entertainment. If you're going to go spend $50 on a night out going to a movie and a dinner somewhere, then, and you don't want to do that, but you want to go to the casino and put $50 in the slot machine, then it's entertainment.
So I have a friend who bought a brothel in Nevada and he didn't know anything about a brothel, but he bought one and he no longer owns it.
He didn't know anything about it?
No, said he didn't. And the reason he no longer owns it is because it wasn't profitable, because sex had moved to the internet. Mm. But what he did learn during that period in time is that when you have a brothel, you are regulated and managed. The county sheriff actually comes in and conducts monthly tests to make sure the health and well-being of the women working there is good.
Mm-hmm.
With the internet, there is absolutely zero oversight, and it puts mm-hmm. people at risk. And, you know, as much as nobody wants to talk about a brothel, it kind of put everything into context for me, and I can see where the analogy in gambling would be exactly the same.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's some of the oldest vices. Prostitution and gambling are some of the oldest vices since the beginning of when mankind figured out that when they started seeking entertainment, you know, it's some of the oldest vices.
My point, in a strange way, is that it isn't the gambling, it isn't the prostitute that causes the issue. It's the person. It's no different than the gun argument. People say that guns should be illegal. It's not the gun that causes the problem. It's the person. You got to address the person, not the vice.
That's true. That's absolutely correct. There's going to be bad actors in everything you pick. I mean, it doesn't matter what industry you choose, what discussion you want to have. There's going to be bad actors there. There's going to be folks that try to take advantage of whatever system it is. There's going to be folks that come in and from day one trying to figure out how they're going to defraud the system or take advantage of it.
I cannot get my breaks in proper today, John Boland. We didn't even think we were going to talk about prostitution. Here we are talking about prostitution. I want to try some certified Piedmontese in John Boland's Smokehouse. Lone Creek Cattle Company makes it possible to get more details about you as a cattleman being a part of the system and getting paid properly for the beef cattle that you produce at lonecreekcattleco.com. We'll be back with the second half of Roll Route right after this. Welcome back to Roll Route, Trent Luce. Alongside John Boland joining us, I spoke at that Shelbyville horse racetrack. That's a beautiful facility.
Mm-hmm. It is. My wife and I go over there sometimes. She likes to play the penny slots. You know, you can spend $20 and spend hours sitting there, and she enjoys it. So, I mean, you know, it's cheaper than some other things that she might want to go do. Fine with me.
I want to ask you what those other things might be, you know, promoting the economy, I'm sure.
Right.
All right. So I thought you would be a wonderful follow-up to the Roll Route program we had yesterday where we talked about illegal activity. Steve Hindy was my guest. He's with Shark. And he has targeted rodeo, three things that he has basically made a living at. And by the way, we found his Ginny. My cohort yesterday found his tax returns for the nonprofit about $290,000 in revenue. So he's not just doing it to, you know, to feel good about himself. He is getting revenue. That's beside the point.
Right.
He brought up something that you have first. Well, no, let me not do that. What was your overall perception of the conversation?
The beginning of the conversation talking about rodeo, the rodeo industry, which I know nothing about. I won't sit here and pretend that I do. But one of the things that stuck in my mind that I wanted to make sure I brought up was he kept going back to, you know, all we're doing is we're going in there and we're making them follow their own rules and guidelines. He repeated that a few times, you know.
Sure.
Like, hey, we're just going in and holding their feet to the fire on their own rules. My question is, where did those rules come from originally and why were they put in place? And I'm guessing, and again, I don't know this, but I'm guessing that some of these rules were put in place because there were animal rights activists pushing. They were lobbying for certain rules and regulations in that industry. And they love to do that, Trent. They love to, first of all, push these rules and regulations. A lot of times they'll do it through the state house or the Capitol. They'll do through actual laws. Other times they'll come in there with this touchy-feely, deceptive, let's get to be buddies with you. Okay, well, you agree to do this and do that or not do this and do that. The folks will try to make peace. They'll try to say, let's do it. The next thing you know, the very next rodeo, these folks are sitting there holding your feet to the fire on a rule that they talked you into doing. That it is. Do you see what I'm saying? It all stems from them, and then they want to come in there and try to pretend that that it's they're there for the good of the animals. These folks all have that. I don't know that gentleman, but some of the things that he said, it's that pompous, arrogant, elitist type speak that they cannot help themselves, no matter how hard they try. And he kept saying it, he thought he was doing things the cowboy way, this and that. That's just a snide, condescending.
We should also remind people that as you retired with law enforcement, you then spent 3 years as an investigator with an animal rights organization. So you know the prototype.
Yes, I do. Very well. Up close and personal.
Yeah. So I'm not as hardcore on that, those rules as you are. Because what happens, and I'll just give you my own personal experience, not with rodeo, but with showing livestock. So I'm on the board of a national junior association called Team Purebred. We do wonderful things, create opportunities for kids in and out of the show ring. And we spend a lot of time in our meetings discussing what rules we need to have in place. And the rules typically involve drug testing and what's been put in this animal that should not be put in a food animal. While we don't eat the rodeo animal, there's, I think, a tremendous analogy. Everybody admits that about 95% of the people do nothing that you need to worry about. What do you do to the 5% to keep them in check without penalizing the 95%? That's really what it comes back to. And I have to believe that what we're talking about here in terms of rules for rodeo are really no different.
Right.
And in the bigger picture, where we're not eating the horses immediately after they buck, we should eat them when they're done bucking in their lifetime. I'll throw that in there. It's a little bit of a different concept. I don't personally see why you need to put an electric prod on a horse coming out of the bucking chute. I don't see a reason for that. We teach them and we breed them to buck. But along those lines, if in fact the biggest thing for me, and I did not make this point yesterday and I wished I would have, if in fact people who show up, they continue to flock to rodeos and PBR events all across the country, John. Mm-hmm. They do it in droves. If there was brutality or outright human infliction of pain on animals, people wouldn't keep showing up.
Right.
Because inherently they're adverse to that, and they just wouldn't show up. They wouldn't participate.
Right. And I want to say this. You know that we've discussed this several times. I do not advocate animal cruelty in any way, shape, or form, any kind of animal abuse. It makes no sense. It makes no sense. It's not productive in any way to do that. And again, I don't know anything about the rodeo industry, but to answer your question about what do we do with the 5% bad actors, you regulate it from inside.
Do you agree with my concept, first of all?
Yes. Yes, I do.
Okay.
I do agree with your concept that the rodeo industry being totally separate from the food animal industry.
What I meant by that is that in your time investigating illegal gambling and the things that you work on and your time with animal rights organization, do you believe it's about 5% that are a problem? Or am I way out of line there too?
Maybe
1%? Maybe 1%?
Maybe, because let's use this correlation, the dog breeding organization.
Oh, great.
They have a small percentage. There's a bad apple in every bushel, just like we said earlier, no matter what the industry is. But those organizations, the dog breeder associations, take care of their problems internally, especially in some of the tight-knit communities that aren't out in the public eye. They will go to the person that they feel like is not doing the right thing that could cause a problem for the entire community, entire organization. They will go to that person and they'll handle that internally. So if there's a bad actor in whatever industry it is that is part of your livelihood or part of the entertainment industry, then that industry needs to regulate themselves. They need to take care of that. I'm not saying that they close off everything to the public eye, because like you said, the masses of people that attend these things are the public eye. They are the eyes and ears of these things. And if there was such a problem that was causing shock, then the public would just stop going.
Right.
But there again, Trent, there's a difference in perspective of people that are attending these things are ranchers and farmers, and they understand animal husbandry, and they understand the purpose of animals on this earth.
Mm-hmm.
So they're not going to be shocked by some of the things that someone else would that goes in to see, and sees this for the first time. It's when they've been indoctrinated by liberal organizations, commercials on TV, all the way from childhood in schools to the cartoons they watch that anthropomorphize animals into being human-like. These are the folks that are shocked when they see this because they don't know what reality is.
Yeah, the one thing I have no time for, two things. I've been in that position where you need to call your neighbor on something, no matter whether it's your physical neighbor or not, doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. That you don't think is right. I still am first and foremost an advocate for property rights. You can use your property as you see fit. Mm-hmm. When you start using your property in a way that hinders how I use my property, that's when we have a discussion. Whether you're in a rodeo showing livestock or just somebody that's next to you overgrazing, whatever the case may be, mm-hmm. the list is long. But I got to tell you, John, being in that position, that's about the toughest thing you can do. But what I have no time for is those individuals in our community that say, well, I don't like the way that John Boland's doing it with those horses over there. I'm going to call XYZ Animal Rights Organization and mm-hmm. alert them.
Mm-hmm.
You have just told the entire world that your days are numbered as an animal owner yourself because you're turning your neighbor into an animal rights organization. And I hear it far too often.
Right. Right. And it's happening with a lot of folks that are moving into the rural communities that have never been around anything like hunting and raising animals. And they want to move into the rural communities and have this picturesque landscape and quiet. And, you know, people will call and complain about barking dogs in the country.
Right. Oh, I know.
You know, and there's a major lack of sense of community. No matter where you go anymore, people don't know their neighbor, their next door neighbor that they can see their front porch. They don't know who they are. Mm-hmm. So they would much rather just get on the phone and call and complain to the local authorities or whoever. You know, when I worked at the ASPCA, people would call the ASPCA about animal problems and demand that something be done. It's things they didn't understand, you know.
Well, I know a lady, and you know who I'm talking about, Tina Fey in New Hampshire. She was charged with animal cruelty, convicted. And it really, the whole reason was that she had a neighbor didn't like her dogs barking.
Mm-hmm.
That's where it all started.
Right, right. That's all you have to do is get the attention of the local authorities and just keep complaining. Just keep complaining about things. And before you know it, you get someone there that's nosing around that starts to create a case against someone.
Yeah. And the case is always won in public opinion, not in the courtroom, by the way.
Right. That's right.
You know all about that. Hey, I'm going to get out of this one on time, and we have one segment left. We're going to really talk about smoking chickens when we get back. First, I want to remind you about Neogen, the opportunity to look at the genomics. By the way, John Boland, I'll just put you on the spot. From a genomic evaluation standpoint, what food animal do you think looks at the most genomics to improve the health, well-being, and performance of the food animal?
I would guess hogs.
Yep, that'd be a good guess. You'd be wrong. Chickens. More genomic tests looking at what the chicken can do to improve overall efficiency than any other food animal, followed by dairy, beef, and hogs are at the bottom of the list, believe it or not. That's crazy.
Mm-hmm.
But all of those are dwarfed by people looking at their ancestors of their pets. That's the craziest part of the story. But here's the good part of the story. Neogen doesn't care what animal you want to look at the genomics of. We look at all of our boars. We look at every one of our calves. And you can do the same thing to help improve profitability as a livestock producer. Shining a light on your genetic future. More details at neogen.com. We'll be back with the final segment. John Bowen, roll out after this. Welcome back to Roll Route, Trent Luce, alongside John Boland, joining us from somewhere south of Indianapolis, Indiana, down there where the hoot owls are doing things that are illegal in southern Indiana.
Yeah. I better call somebody and report some of this stuff.
Speaking of, get somebody investigating. Speaking of southern Indiana, you and I are going to be a part of a meeting tomorrow. I have no idea what you've gotten me into, but is this a meeting that people can watch virtually? All I know is I'm going to be at my house virtually. You're going to be there, and we're going to tag team somehow. What's going on with this?
It's one of those dog breeder associations that I was just talking about. They get together. They try to get together a couple times a year. This year, of course, has changed that, but they get together and discuss what's going on in the industry and invite folks to come in and speak. They have someone from the USDA is going to be a guest speaker virtually, and someone from the Indiana Board of Animal Health. So, you know, these organizations are not what the animal rights extremists try to portray them as being hiding in dark crevices all over the place with dogs that are stacked on top of each other with feces and urine soaked hair and deplorable conditions, all of their favorite catchphrases. It's such baloney. It's such lies. Yeah. These folks have very professional and very well organized associations, and their animals are very well taken care of, better than a lot of them that were taken care of by the ASPCA when I worked there.
Oh yeah, if you want your animal to die, have it confiscated by ASPCA or somebody else, and they'll kill it within 30 days. Nobody has been thrown under the bus more than the dog breeder. I'll just point blank say that. They continually get thrown under the bus. We replace 9 million dogs a year in the United States, and through licensed dog breeders, we can't account for 500,000 that are produced.
Right. Interesting.
The rest are imported.
Yeah. That, on that topic, I took a few notes this morning because I want to try to remember. First of all, I had a little timeline here. April 29th, 2020. So everybody knows the COVID timeline, so you can just fill in the blanks here. HSUS press release. Humane Society International and Mars Incorporated joined forces to care for dogs and cats around the world affected by the COVID-19 pandemic. Follow me here. Mm-hmm. Mars donated $1 million to Humane Society International. This is from HSUS's website. HSI will use these funds in targeted countries to help keep companion animals in their homes, to assist shelters and provide for street dogs and cats, whatever that is, a street dog or cat, I don't know.
It's a homeless dog, I think.
I guess, or feral cats. Now, August 12th, 2020, ABC News. The first dog to test positive for COVID-19 in North Carolina has died. North Carolina State Vet Hospital, August 3rd. Happened August 3rd. Now, and I'll try to speed up here a little bit. October 28th.
It's like you're asking me for a warrant. You're giving me all the timeline to get a warrant.
I still do the timeline thing.
Okay, go ahead.
I swear and affirm under the penalties of perjury that the foregoing statements are true and accurate to the best of my knowledge. October 28th, 2020, ABC News. Almost 200 dogs rescued from South Korea.
Rescued from the meat market. I saw that one.
Land in the U.S. to find new homes.
Yeah.
Oh, what's HSUS doing with this money, this $1 million? They're not taking care of animals here. They're going over and spending 14 days quarantined in a hotel in South Korea, spending that money, waiting to bring back 200 dogs to the U.S. from South Korea. It's just, they're so, it, the hypocrisy just sickens me. And folks just don't, I wish that we, the farmers, ranchers, hunters, sportsmen, would just stop preaching to the choir. I wish that, I mean, it's great that you and I are doing this because there's a lot of folks that see your shows and stuff, but all we're doing is talking in the same circles about this stuff. Until the general public sees this and understands the hypocrisy and the waste, and I don't see any real major change. I might be a little bit pessimistic and negative there, but.
Well, I'll use a couple examples. When it became apparent that HSUS was really stood for Have Sex, You Stay, was running a brothel with this organization. In other words, if you donate, you can have sex with one of our interns. That's all documented. The lady who was on the board said, well, we just do what we can to get funds for animals. She endorsed it. She said it was fine. And so I tried to, working with some other people, tried to make that very public so people knew who they're giving their money to. Mm-hmm. And for the most part, John, it fell on deaf ears.
Right.
You did a phenomenal job a year ago last summer when ASPCA killed, what was it, 27 dogs?
26, I think.
26 in transit from Mississippi to Wisconsin, and it fell on deaf ears. So I'm asking you, here we are, the day before Halloween 2020, what does it take to get people to pay attention to these organizations are not who you think they are?
Right. Well, it's going to take somebody in the mainstream media, which I know everybody's going to laugh at this comment because slim chance this is going to happen. It's going to take someone at a national media level to grab this thing and hammer it. Not just a 30-second blurb on their show, not just a one-segment interview, but to do a complete series on this. It's going to take something that is hammered.
Yeah, okay, I disagree with you. Mainstream media is not going to do that. You and I just need to hammer that home. We need to get together and make these videos that are compelling. Because I got news for you. After Trump wins on Tuesday, mainstream media will start decaying, and it will not be what it was.
Yeah.
So we are the source.
Yeah. Somebody's going to have to step in and fill the gap there with, you know.
Yeah, because those people who are involved in that distribution of the news as we know it today, they're all sympathetic to those organizations. So they're not going to do this. Hey, look at who this really is, because they've been duped.
That's one of the major tentacles going into that filthy swamp in D.C. is the animal rights lobby. It has been for years, for decades. So the money that HSUS and ASPCA launder through our politicians is just astronomical. And a lot of Republicans are falling prey to this. It's disgusting. They're not true conservative Republicans.
And I'm just going to say we have a Republican named Laura Trump who's on the wrong side of this, and that needs to be brought to the attention of folks as well, which I know for sure it's been brought to the attention of the president. But we'll deal with her better than we'll deal with anybody on the other side on these issues. Hey, we have 3 minutes left. We did spend a lot of time talking about cockfighting yesterday. You have history there. What's your take on that today?
Well, I'm still adamantly opposed to cockfighting in the sense of the way that men have taken it and used it. I understand the natural, the way roosters fight. In fact, I had a couple of roosters out here not too long ago that fought almost all day long while I was gone. When I came back, they were both still alive, but I mean, you could tell they'd been at it. Mm-hmm. It happens. That problem has been resolved now, let's just say. But when you take and strap on the weapons, the gavs and the knives, and you add that element to it. And it, you know, like we've discussed before, it's illegal. It's illegal in all states in the U.S. It's illegal. So I'm opposed to that, but I will say that my stance on it is not what it used to be. I believe that going after that entire game fowl breeding industry is unfair. I believe it's unfair. And I have the proof and the experience personally to back my statements up that I believe that we are going after some of the wrong folks. And not we. I don't do it anymore, obviously. I don't investigate any of that anymore. Mm-hmm. And I don't really I don't support anyone doing it anymore. I used to be a consultant for some law enforcement on those topics, which I am not any longer. But that needs to have it. First of all, like we've talked about before, if your investigation as a police officer into animal fighting started with an animal rights organization, then you need to look at it. You need to take a very close look at it, because these extremists will say and do anything to push their agenda, and they know they have to have law enforcement to do it. So if the law enforcement officer isn't willing to be trained through his own experience to investigate these crimes as they are listed in whatever state in their criminal code, if these law enforcement officers aren't willing and have the energy to do that themselves, then they need to just quit doing those investigations. Because if they're relying on the ASPCA and HSUS to type up their probable cause affidavit, they don't need to be doing it. It's unconstitutional. Period.
I really don't have anything to add to that. I mean, I don't back up from anything I said yesterday in that I'm not going to participate, but I do see how it is the first step in the animal rights organizations leading us to animals with personhood. And that is ultimately mm-hmm. the great danger in my mind.
Mm-hmm. Take the most shocking thing you can find and put it out in the public eye.
Absolutely. Yep.
That's the beginning.
And that is it. On a Red Shirt Friday, where we say thank you to those men and women who continue to risk their freedom so that we can go to the store, buy ammo, and have a representative Republican vote for the president. Fairly, we believe. We have done that because of the men and women who were there to sacrifice everything for us. We say thank you to those veterans and active individuals today, including those law enforcement officials like John Boland. We have journeyed down the road connecting rural and urban America. John Boland and I both remind you that all roads do lead to a rural route. And just one final question today for the cattlemen listening. Are you tired of doing everything right and then not getting paid the proper amount for the calves that you produce? Then you might be interested in the Certified Piedmontese system. You're tailor-made for it. Merlin Will has the details and the recipe. Details at LoneCreekCattleCo.com. That's how you find Marlin anyway.